Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good? It's Skyline time.
Hi, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. Welcome to a special Masters edition of the podcast. You can email me at ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/Ryan Ballingy. You can check out Golf News Net on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com and facebook.com/Golf News Net. Find my work on golfnewsnet.com or on Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog at sports.yahoo.com. This week's show is another interview like last week with Michael Bamberger from Sports Illustrated, except this one has a little bit more cachet. It's Gary Player, and Mr. Player spoke with us earlier in the week, and we recorded the interview and are very happy to present it with you. Mr. Player is one of the most fascinating guys to talk to in the sport of golf, not only because of his pedigree and what he's accomplished and earning that spot as a ceremonial tee shot on the first tee at the Masters this morning, but he has such an interesting perspective on life because of how he grew up and what he accomplished that he was a must-have for this podcast. And we're very grateful that he'd spent some time with us to talk about the Masters, his life, and his perspective on things. So, unedited, here is our interview with Gary Player, and we hope you enjoy it.
How are you today?
I'm well. How are you, Mr. Player?
Very well, thanks.
Have you been out on the grounds today?
Yes, I did.
How's it looking?
Everything's looking good. I think we're in for a very exciting Masters championship with four or five or six guys with a good chance of winning. Rory McIlroy able to join five of us for the Grand Slam, which would be encouraging. It would be wonderful.
What did it mean to you when you completed the career Grand Slam, and what do you think it will mean to Rory if he does it this week?
In 1965, I was going to Greensboro, and Jack Nicklaus said to me, "You want to win the Grand Slam?" And we both wanted to win it at that time. I wanted to win it before he did. He probably wanted to win it before me. And he was instrumental in me winning it. Because I said, "Well, I'm going to Greensboro." He said, "Come on, come to St. Louis." And I reluctantly went with him, and it was the best thing I ever did. And it meant so much to me because I joined two other people, Gene Sarazen and Ben Hogan, to do it. And I said to my wife, "You know, nobody will ever win the Grand Slam at 29 again." And Nicklaus came along and did it at 26. And then Tiger came along and did it at 24. So, and here's Rory with a chance to win it at the age of 25. Quite remarkable.
It is. And do you think there's a lot of pressure on Rory to complete the Grand Slam, or how do you think he'll handle it?
Well, there's a lot of pressure on everybody playing in this tournament.
Yeah.
To win the tournament. So yes, we all had that pressure. Five of us had it, and many others had it that didn't win the Grand Slam. Arnold Palmer, Tom Watson, Lee Trevino, Sam Snead. Everybody has that pressure, and it's how you handle it.
Do you think that the conditions where it looks like we're going to see some rain each of the next 4 days will favor Rory because of his length and the way that he's won his other major championships?
Well, he is from Ireland, where they don't see the sun very often. Rain and wind and bad weather. You know, some players, Tom Watson loved it. Arnold Palmer loved it. I loved playing in the wind. Everybody's got their own little idiosyncrasies, you know?
Yeah. And it seems like for Rory that he really likes it when the major championship venues play a little bit softer than maybe they were anticipated. I think back to the U.S. Open when he won by so many at Congressional, that he really took advantage of a softened golf course. Do you think he'll try to be aggressive if that's the case at Augusta National?
Well, what I like about Rory's game, he's an aggressive player all the time.
Yeah.
And he's a very fine young man. guidance and well-mannered, you know, looks after the press, never too busy to do an interview, and I think that's imperative in an athlete's career. Unfortunately, we live in a time where athletes don't quite get it.
What do you think that gap is between the athletes of your era and the athletes of today?
Repeat that, please.
What do you think the gap is between the athletes of your era that got it and the athletes of today that seem to be a little more flimsy? Let's put it that way.
If I understand your question, I think it was harder for Jack Nicklaus to win majors because there were a lot of us that won a lot of majors whilst he was winning, whereas it's harder to win a golf tournament on the tour today than it was in Nicklaus's time. There were more players that could win. There were probably 60 when we played, and now they're probably 110.
So do you think that the parity on the PGA Tour today and in international golf in general, does that making majors a little bit more difficult to win, or does it allow players like McIlroy and Woods and Mickelson and others to kind of keep adding on to their total a little bit more easily once they've broken through for those first couple?
Nowadays, golfers pop up out of the woods as young people because they're exposed to it at a much earlier age, and it's wonderful to see that. And if you take the ladies' tour, if you look at Lydia Ko, probably the best golfer in the world at the age of, what age was she when she was the best, 15 or something, I don't know, it's quite remarkable. And then you see a young man come from China, he's 14 years old.
Yeah.
I said to my wife, there's a misprint. She said, what would you do if he was your son? I said, I'd withdraw him immediately. He can't break 90. No way a boy of 14 can break 90 at Augusta off the back tees. And he goes along, and with an unfair penalty of one stroke, he still makes the cut. And then the next week he goes down to New Orleans, where they're playing the tour, and makes the cut again.
Yeah.
That's the second most impressive thing I've ever seen. Tiger Woods winning the Grand Slam at 24 and a boy of 14 doing what he did. I mean, it's just a miracle.
Guan was amazing last year, and you mentioned Lydia Ko at 17, the best player in the world, at least in the women's world, if not the world in general. Do you think that the old adage was you had your peak in golf around 31, 32, 33. Do you think that the peak performance of a golfer these days will get a little bit younger as they get more and more experience earlier in life?
That depends on the individual. You know, young people don't worry about their bodies as a holy temple and exercise and eat well and rest well and do the necessary things. You know, there's a great... There are probably 1 out of 20,000 people that treat their body as a holy temple, that exercise and eat properly. So that's a very hard question to answer. Then it comes in the genetical side of things. Some people just live a lot longer. A lot of people don't live from 70 to 80. They exist because they're on medicine. I'm in my 80th year now, and I don't believe in medicine. On very rare occasions do I believe there are some medicines you'd have to take, but I certainly do not take medicines for a headache and a little pain and this and that. I mean, I get a kick out of watching TV ads. They say, if you've got diabetes, which there are going to be 100 million Americans with diabetes in 30 years' time, by the way, they say, take this medicine. If it makes you dizzy, stomach ache, bad back, this, that, seven things, call your doctor. Well, I mean, that sure isn't a good indication it's very good for you.
No, it's not.
I want to tell you, I wouldn't be taking it. My word, I think, according to the China study that's written by one of the leading scientists, he says more people die of the medicine than the disease.
Yeah. And those are the commercials you see during golf tournaments.
Exactly.
No wonder golf's in trouble.
It's really really, it's a fascinating world we live in. I was speaking to a young Chinese boy in China. He says, in America, he says, I see, many students take alcohol, many students take drugs, many students, they dance with no clothes on, many students, they don't pass. Next year, they come back. He says, China, you know, pass, you know, good, you're out. It's interesting, the different answers to different questions. It's hard to generalize. Nothing is the same, as we don't have the same fingerprints. But the big thing we've got to do, and that is my great dream, is to make the youth of America realize how lucky they are to live in this country, to understand that they have freedom, but don't go over the brink of freedom into the category of lack of discipline. And those were words from the great President Eisenhower.
This is a great segue into what Rory McIlroy seems to have done in the last 18 to 24 months and really commit himself to fitness and really taking advantage of the physical gifts that he's been given for the next 10 to 15 years to be a potentially dominating player in the game. But then you have a voice like Butch Harmon's kind of airing caution to say, don't lift too much, don't get out of control with it. So what is the balance point for someone like Rory McIlroy or any young player to commit to fitness, to commit to that discipline you're speaking of, but not take it so far to the point that it limits their golf game?
That it what does what to your golf game?
That you almost overcommit to fitness to the point that it might limit your golf game and your commitment to your craft instead of just being in really good shape.
You know, it's very interesting for me, having started weight training in golf, listening to the absolute junk that I hear from day to day, mostly from people that have never exercised. And I don't know how you over-exercise. I don't know how you over-read. I don't know how you over-have a zest for education. I don't know how you can work too hard. What made America great was faith, hard work, and education and family life. I don't know how you have too much of something as long as you know how to relax and enjoy your life and you're happy with what you're doing. I keep reading that Tiger Woods, the reason he's not playing well now is because he exercised too hard. Well, what nonsense. I mean, absolute 100% nonsense. The reason why Tiger Woods is having the troubles that he had is because, unfortunately, which can happen to all of us, he encountered difficulties and made little mistakes. But the fact remains is that what ruined Tiger Woods' golf is having all these different coaches all telling him something different, where he got so confused that it messed him up. If Tiger Woods had never had a lesson, after he won the U.S. Open by 15 shots, there's no doubt in my mind he would have won at least 20 major championships. I have no doubt about that. Whereas now, this week, I think will determine Tiger Woods' future. If he starts dumping chips 5 yards and sculling the ball over the green, off the edge of the green, he's got a serious problem for the rest of his life. If he's overcome that little problem, he can go on to great heights and do extremely well. And I hope Tiger Woods plays well. I hope he wins majors. The game needs Tiger Woods. He's a man of another color. We need him in Africa and Asia and all parts of the world. We need to have icons. We need to have champions. And they can say what they like about all the young players playing today, but none of them could play like Tiger Woods at his prime. So let's hope that he comes back. And we are lucky to have wonderful young champions like Rory, Jordan Spieth. We've got Henrik Stenson, who's a wonderful player, Jason Day, Bubba Watson. We can go on and on and on. A lot of very, very good players. So it's going to be a very exciting Masters this week.
Who are the players, the two or three, that you think have the best chance to win this week?
I'll give you my four names. They're Henrik Stenson, Spieth and Jason Day.
Those are all names I regard very highly this week.
Pardon?
Those are all names I regard very highly this week. But what is their common thread that you like so much about them?
Well, Jordan Spieth doesn't hit the ball as well as Stenson or McIlroy or Jason Day. But he's a better putter.
Yeah.
And the best putter is, I put my money on the best putter usually, because Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson were the worst drivers of a golf ball I ever saw in, champion golfers. And yet they were number one and number two in the world, because we must remember that 70% of shots that are played in golf are played from 100 yards in.
Mm-hmm.
Long drives are the biggest propaganda I've ever heard in my life. I saw Ballesteros the year Nicklaus won it when he was 46. At number 15, he hit the drive 340 yards at a 5-iron to the green and put it in the water. It meant nothing. And then Nicklaus holed the putt at number 17. That meant something. Every time you hold a putt, it means something. Long drives don't always mean something. So it's the short game, and that's what I like about Jordan Spieth. He's a phenomenal putter.
Can you talk briefly about how it got together with Mr. Crenshaw, where he'll be joining you and Mr. Nicklaus tomorrow at the par 3 contest?
This is something that the Augusta National must have decided on. I only just knew that when I arrived here. I saw that Ben Crenshaw was playing with us instead of Arnold. Obviously, Arnold is not fit enough to play. I think he'll still drive off the first tee with Jack and myself on Thursday morning. I hope so anyway.
What does that tee shot mean to you and to Mr. Nicklaus and to Mr. Palmer each year to be able to do that together?
I cannot speak on their behalf, but for me, we traveled the world together. As Nick Faldo said the other day, he said, I wish that when I was playing and was number one player in the world with Cebriano Ballesteros, and he mentioned some other player, that we could have traveled around the world and had the closeness that you three had. It was unusual. We traveled, we stayed at each other's homes, at our ranches. We traveled around the world together. We did TV shows. It was quite unique. And it was a very special moment in golfing history. And Arnold Palmer were not only great golfers, but they were phenomenal ambassadors for this wonderful country, America.
The last question I have for you, Mr. Player, kind of relates a little bit to your book from a few years ago, Don't Choke, and that is, what advice would you have for any contender for the Masters coming down the second nine on Sunday to make sure they remain focused at the task at hand and get the job done?
That is very, very difficult because, as again, I repeat, everybody's very difficult. And what I did to put myself in a position where I didn't choke, I did a lot of mind exercises, and I went through pain barriers. It's a long story. And then I had a very difficult, tough youth with my mother dying when I was young and my brother going to war to fight with America and Britain at the age of 17, and my sister being at boarding school. Thank God my father sent me to one of the best schools in the world in South Africa, where you had to say a prayer at school, you had to stand up when the teacher came in the classroom. You had five languages, you had gymnasiums, you had debating halls, you had everything in the school, which very few countries in the world have. Even America don't have that. And I was able to get this good education, and it was struggle because I'd come home and nobody was there, and I'd have to iron my clothes and cook my own food and get up in the mornings and travel an hour and a half to school. And at the time I thought it was tough, but the greatest gift that you can receive in the world is adversity, and everybody will have it. It's how you handle it. People who handle it go on to have success and gratitude and appreciation. People that don't, a large number of them suffer from depression, and we should be teaching this in schools. Many things we should be teaching in schools that we're completely oblivious of in teachings.
Well, I hope that this Masters turns out to be as great of a one as you and I think it's both going to be. And I hope you enjoy your time there this week, and looking forward to seeing you on Thursday morning as well as tomorrow.
Okay, take care, my friend.
Thank you, Mr. Player. Take care.
Thanks again to Gary Player for the time, for spending
20 minutes with us to talk about the Masters, golf, and some things life as well. You'll notice he has a passion for so many things outside the game of golf that it comes through in everything that he says. That'll do it for us this week on the show. Next week on our podcast, we'll go over the results of the Masters, who won, who lost, what happened, and what mattered most going forward. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter, @RyanBellingy. And if you're a podcast subscriber, thanks for following us. Please check out Golf News Net Radio, a 24/7 stream of golf talk available on our website, golfnewsnet.com, our on-demand site, golfnewsradio.com, as well as on the TuneIn Radio app. Thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk to you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.